Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech, as well as Revelations Radio Network. You can also find Nowhere to Run on iTunes, various podcast sites around the internet, whatever way you found it. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a good show for you today. Mainly, I want to do a lot of different kind of announcement sort of things, and so we'll get into that, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But we've got a lot of interesting things going on in the show here, so stay tuned. Keep this show updated on your podcast, because I'm about to kick it into overdrive with a lot of different things that we're going to do, so we'll talk a little bit about that as we go on. But first, let's talk about, let's see here, first thing I did, okay, closing Conspiracy Close, just an announcement that I did close conspiracyclose.com. You can still go to conspiracyclose.com and read the information and the reference material about the shirts and everything, and you can still go to conspiracyclose.com/nowheretorun. But I did take off the ability to purchase any clothes or, you know, spend any money or anything like that. And the reason I did is I really didn't like people being able to accuse me of doing what I do to sell shirts. And it's been more of an issue lately because it seems like I'm going further into pointing out who I think is involved in this. And a lot of times those people are people that, you know, we've trusted and so on. So it's just really crucial, I think, right now that I don't do that. I don't think I'll ever do it again, but, you know, as far as selling shirts and conspiracy clothes or whatever, but I just think it's what I need to do. So I took off the ability to buy the shirts, and, you know, I never really made any money with it anyway. I gave away a lot of shirts to a lot of people, and it was my pleasure to do it. I had a lot of fun, and everything that I did with it was supposed to happen. I'm sure of that. I mean, even from the very beginning, it was like 2 years ago. It was like right when I quit drinking and I just started that business and all these ideas, and I started basically threw my hat into the ring of the conspiracy realm and basically said, okay, here I am, and I'm a dissenter, essentially. And I think that's the most liberating step, and I think a lot of people that do this similar things, like the radio shows and stuff. And it was actually Revere Radio that was the first people that, when I first started Conspiracy Close, Revere Radio, Rob Revere, was the first person that responded to my request to different conspiracy sites to put up a banner ad. And he said, you know, if you give me one of every one of your shirts, I'll put a banner up for so, you know, whatever. I can't remember what the deal was. But I remember listening to Revere and being like, oh, man, this is, and I remember the first email I sent to him was like, or probably the second email was, I just feel this weird kinship with Revere, and I don't know why. I don't know why. And so for probably, I don't know how many months, I was just advertised on Revere Radio. That was kind of like my association with Revere. And then one day I was like, you know, it had absolutely no intention of ever doing a show on Revere. I mean, it was just strictly advertising. And then it just kind of happened, and so that was a very important part of my development, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. But, as I said, it is closed down officially now. Well, I still got to do a little bit more of the paperwork and stuff to officially close it down, but I'm really, really close to doing that, too. But something that I'm really excited about is the YouTube channel. You can go to a YouTube channel that I've been putting up a lot of movies I've been making lately. I just did one on Zachariah Sitchin, and I did a podcast about this, but I think this kind of illustrates it a little better of what I just put up there. The YouTube channel is youtube.com/nowheretorun1984. So if you go to YouTube.com, just hit /nowheretorun1984, and you'll see my YouTube channel. You can subscribe there. I often put up videos. A lot of those are original videos. The one I just put up, and that's where I've put the Michael Tesorian and Alan Watt ones, and I just put up one regarding Sitchin and some archaeological errors. I've done a show about it a while back, but as I said, I think this is a little more illustrative of what I mean. So I think that that's a really interesting way to go, and I really want to encourage anybody to do the similar things. You, again, have Windows Movie Maker probably on your computer if you have XP or Vista, probably earlier versions. You have Windows Movie Maker. It's extremely easy to do that. Just put some pictures together and tell a story, and YouTube is the place to do it. And if you have any YouTube videos that you have, please link to my YouTube channel, or, you know, do something like that so I can put it on the favorites, because I know if you guys got something, it's probably right around the same things that I'm doing there. And also, so I spent a little bit of time in that. Actually, that video I just put up is interesting because it was something that I was doing, you know, I was actually doing that before the big computer crash happened, and I'd done pretty much the research and actually done the audio, and then the computer crashed around that time, and I never got back to it because, honestly, that's when I was starting to go a lot deeper with that. I was going to make a huge, actually good movie about Sitchin and about Dr. Heiser, Michael Heiser's specific translation errors, and I was going to just detail them and basically do a video version of SitchinIsWrong.com. And it never worked out, mainly because of the computer crash. And so I had that, and I scrapped what I just did because I was going to do a much more in-depth thing. But I figured, you know, I really just feel really pressed for time now, so let's just get this out there and just let it fly and see what happens. But I'll go into the details about why I think it's important and so on a little bit later after I get done with some of these announcements. Also, I also did a movie. This is something I've been working on for a long, long time. Well, I don't know how long. Maybe almost 2 months. A lot of just gathering information and coding stuff and whatever. But I've been working on a movie. This is for, this is a video actually for my band. And I am exceptionally proud of this video. And I really think that you guys will like it probably more than our fans do. I don't know. Our fans seem to have really responded well to it. But it's a lot of, shall I say, conspiracy kind of elements put into it. But the song is really good for it. It's something I'm really, really proud of. It's something I haven't been this proud of a project in a long time. So if you want to check that out, it's a good way to see my band too. I think I don't really talk about the band very much or anything, so it's a good way to be introduced to them if you haven't heard before. And so I'll link that in the show notes section. I was actually thinking about doing a video podcast and sending that out on a video podcast, and I still may do that. I know you can get that video from the podcast of our band, which is linked on the site and stuff. I'll link that in the show notes. But if you go to conspiracyclothes.com/nowheretorun, or you go to nowheretorun.podomatic.com, I'll put a link to the video that I just did. It's called Something's Got to Change. You can just Google Something's Got to Change, and I think it'll show up first. And in case you're wondering which one I am in the video, I am the rhythm guitar player. I'm not the singer. I'm just one of the out-of-focus guys, as that movie Almost Famous says. But yeah, I hang out in the shadows. I'm the rhythm guitar player, and that's kind of my thing. I do in that video and in real life. That's what I do. I hang out in the back and let them do all the hard work. So anyway, so let's see. The difference, though, just to continue in the announcement zone here, the YouTube version somehow doesn't sync up. The video is very particular about needing to be just on a lot of the beats of the song and stuff. And for some reason, YouTube threw it off a little bit. So I like the MySpace version of that, and there's a few others around the internet. But the YouTube one is out of sync, just so you know. So I'm going to be linking you to the MySpace version of that. And if you want downloads of that, you can get it in MP4 format on our MySpace page. There's a link to download it in MP4 format if you so choose to do that. Also, another announcement. I've got to suggest to you the zeitgeistchallenge.com is again doing well. Again, Zeitgeist is still number one, or you know, really, really high up there on Google Video. And I mean, the Zeitgeist Challenge website that me and Frank did is more relevant than ever and more needed than ever. So many people are believing this. I mean, it would be one thing if it were true. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it would be one thing if you could go and find that stuff and be like, yeah, man, this really did happen in ancient history. What's up with that? Why have we been lied to? You know, then I am with you in that case. Then I'm on the same side as you. We're going to go figure it out. But it's not true. It's a lie. Those things didn't happen. They're saying it for a reason. And it actually, the more you figure out why they're saying it, the more you realize that they're actually indoctrinating you into the mystery school religion. And it's not true. It never was intended to be true. It's a ritual. It's more of the same stuff. And anybody that says that they believe in that is either, like most people, just got fooled, like I have been, certainly before in my life. That was actually one of the first lies some 10 years ago that got me, and probably the reason I'm so out to get some of these people is because they got me some odd 10 years ago, and I had completely was fooled, and I was, because of that specific lie in Zeitgeist, it was repackaged another way back then, that it got me totally into all this stuff. I was very much into kind of the new age, I guess you could call it, stuff. And it wasn't until I figured out that they were lying that I was encouraged, like, oh man, and mad. I was mad that somebody got lied to me. And in my thinking, I was like, why would they do that? There's no monetary gain in a lot of cases for that. There's no power exchanging hands. What is the reason for a lie of this nature? And so that's essentially why I'm doing what I'm doing, I guess you could say. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that you can go to, what would really help, if you go to the Zeitgeist Challenge website, which is zeitgeistchallenge.com, there's banners that you could put on your MySpace page. There's little links to where you can copy and paste the HTML code for the Zeitgeist Challenge banners. So if you guys want to put that on your website or your MySpace page, that would really help us out, just to get, the more links we have around the internet, the more popular it is on the search engines. And as I said, this thing is the number one video on the internet, or very, very close to it. So it is definitely, people will know what you're talking about, if not now, in the near future. And I do think that they are kind of shifting gears into this, I don't know. I'm not going to go there. All right, some show notes. I'm very excited. This show, Nowhere to Run, is about to be kicked into high gear. There are going to be a lot of changes. I don't know about changes. I think it's just going to be Nowhere to Run on Ritalin. It's just going to be very focused. Just this week alone, I have 3 interviews lined up. I think we're going to really start doing a lot more interviews and collaborations and so on. And so stay tuned. Keep it updated on your iTunes or your pod feed or whatnot. And I also, something I'm very excited about, I'm not exactly sure how much I'm going to say about it yet, but some kind of collaboration spin-off that I think that you guys are really, really going to love. I know I'm going to love it if it happens and if that's what's supposed to go down, but we'll see more about that in the very near future. And I'm just really excited about it. So stay tuned. I know we've got David Lowe on this week. We've got Barry Chomish. I'm going to be on a very interesting guy on the Revere Radio Network's show, Matt Kazee. Matt's a very, very cool guy, and he did a documentary about Jordan Maxwell, so that should be an interesting interview with him. He just got done doing this documentary, so among other things that we're going to talk about why I feel the way I do about Jordan Maxwell. And he actually just, you know, spent some time, lived with Jordan Maxwell like a week at his house, and I don't know, something like that. So we will have a interesting discussion, I'm sure of it. So stay tuned this week. All those things happening. And in addition to hopefully some more information coming out about what this new spin-off, if you will, is going to be about, which I know you guys are going to like. Excuse me. Okay, let me do a few comments and whatnot about this. I need to apologize to Randy Boggins from the Threshing Floor. I just did the Rapture show, and it basically called him and Jeff Cross replacement theologists, or said that they held replacement theology. I said some mighty harsh things about replacement theology, of which I don't apologize for. I'm not making an apology to replacement theology, but I am making an apology to Randy and or Jeff of if I called them unnecessarily replacement theologists. Randy has informed me that it is more like remnant theology that he holds. I have tried to find the difference of the two to tell you here today, but it is not so easy, and honestly, I don't see much of a difference. It honestly looks to me like just a more elite version of replacement theology, but hey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to post his doctrinal position paper on the show notes section of conspiracyclose.com/nowheretorun or nowheretorun.podomatic.com so you can see for yourself and you can try to find the difference between replacement theology and remnant theology. Email him, ask him what the difference is. But if he isn't, and I'm sure he isn't if he says he isn't, then I am sorry, Randy, for putting that label on you or your ministry. Okay, and while we're in the business of apologizing, I need to apologize, I believe, to Freeman, who is a fellow host on Revere Radio Network and also does a lot of things on Google Video, etc. He's very prolific in that regard, and I think the reason I need to apologize is because in the last Jordan Maxwell post I did in regards to Frank Lordy's video about Jordan Maxwell, and I mentioned Freeman in this context, saying that he was one of these people that were cheering on the New Atlantis. Like, hey, the New Atlantis is going to be great, and, you know, it's a very mystery school, symbolic thing of what they're trying to create right now. And so like a lot of things that I think Freeman does, which I don't apologize for, I do think Freeman has this kind of weird Stockholm syndrome where he, for some reason, a lot of the things that he does is exactly what they do, and, you know, a lot of the things that he likes is exactly what they like, and so there's a lot of confusion there. So the Atlantis thing, he was saying and points out that he exposes Atlantis and that they like Atlantis, not him, blah, blah, blah. And so for that, I apologize. Not much of an apology, I don't guess. But I'll say this. The reason that I'm semi-insincere in that, although I do owe him apology for that, is that I talk about Freeman in the same breath that I talk about Tsarian and Maxwell, and that they all three are... Their whole shtick is, hey, guys, go learn magic. We need to be good magicians if we're going to beat the New World Order. Sometimes it's in the context of beating the New World Order. Sometimes it's just, hey, learn magic in order to be a good person and to come to your full potential, etc., etc. Now, that's fine as a belief system, you know, and I understand that people think that I'm railing against them because I just, you know, Christians, you know, rail against stuff that they don't understand or whatever. But I'm trying to plead with you to listen to the shows about what we found out about these entities. I mean, there's stuff that you can put your finger on and say, okay, we know this about these entities, you know. You guys believe in automatic writing, you believe in channeling, you believe in all this stuff. You know that they exist, and you know that they give information and that they're concerned about the things that we believe in so much so that they give us information. Like, you know, they would automatic write the Course in Miracles or something like that. Now, everybody, you know, in this stuff believes that, so we know the entities exist. So my point is, let's find out what we know about them. Would they lie? Do they have any reason to lie? Can we trust them, and what are their motives, you know? And in that study, we found out a good deal. And we found out, number one, that they don't have any right to this domain except through our free will. It's a very technical system. And that is why they devised all these, shall I say, tricks, these games, this occult knowledge is simply hidden from you because you don't understand that you're doing a self-serving job that was intended to do. Thousands of years ago, they taught us occult knowledge in order to open doors for them. Yes, we get bones thrown to us. Yes, they give us things. Yes, you can become more powerful the more you let them have control by giving them your free will. But you are opening doors. And so my war here is not with them, not with Maxwell, Tsarian, or Freeman, but with the entities that they are helping get more power in this dimension. They're teaching people to open doors, okay, on massive scales. They're teaching all these people that are learning truth to open doors for the very group that is the New World Order. These entities are the New World Order, period. You know, that's why you look at the mind control thing, and we found out, you know, that one of the things that they do when they create these multiple personalities, they create several personalities, some of which have interesting, you know, jobs, some of which don't, I mean, some of them, and they would empower a particular personality. They bring up a personality, train it to do a particular job, yada, yada, go back in there, they call it up, train it again, go back, and then and the reason that it's married to satanic ritual abuse and that everybody with multiple personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder invariably also has symptoms, if not outright satanic ritual abuse, and that is because they take them to satanic rituals. Yes, they take them there to dissociate. Some of that stuff is so scary that it makes you break off and have a dissociative thing, and they can create another personality, but it's also because they use those satanic rituals to call up demons to attach to particular personalities that personality has given up its free will. Yes, it's a clean slate, but it also can be manipulated in varying degrees in its will, because you cannot attach a demon without the will of that personality. So they shatter the personality into a million pieces, find the ones that they can attach it to. So my point is that once they get an entity of these same kind of entities that are doing the automatic writing and doing the channeling, and the ones that are channeling and saying, hey, you're talking to Ra, you're talking to this, the same ones that a lot of times are your aliens. Hey, you want to know why you see a lot of aliens all the time and you're into occult knowledge? It's not because you figured out the truth. It's not because, hey, I must be on the right track because these benevolent aliens are following me everywhere. Look, they are deceiving angels of light. Next time you see a UFO in the sky, use the name of Jesus Christ and see what happens to that light in the sky. I know what that sounds like, and I want to make a caveat here that the alien thing is so messed up that there is these elements of reality as well. I mean, some of that stuff is absolutely tangible, real. Some of it is astral. Some of it is both. The weirdest thing about all this is the merging of astral and physical. Yes, the military is involved. Yes, the government's involved. Yes, the Satanists are involved. This is a merging of some seriously dark stuff that is real as it is astral. That's the weirdest thing about the study of aliens that we've encountered. And the most telling part of that is the name of Jesus is completely trumps everything, no matter what rank of demonic or alien or whatever. They just all knees bow to that name, and that is a very interesting element in this research. I mean, you just can't overlook that. I mean, no abduction by anybody, Christian or non-Christian, has ever been stopped publicly except for the name of Jesus Christ. I mean, that is the only way that we have actual scientific data from MUFON, etc., that actually stops abductions. I mean, you're pretty much on their terms until you use the name of Jesus. It's just that simple. Okay, so what I really wanted to say about this is that me, Freeman, Tessarian, and Maxwell are diametrically opposed. I am trying to get people to close doors. I'm trying to get them to close the doors to these entities because they are the New World Order. You know, what I was trying to say with the reason that they attached them to, they've got a technical way to attach them to people with mind control is interesting because they are the hive mind that the conspiracy world can't figure out. We all try to scratch our heads and say, you know, they seem to be, speaking of like the New World Order Illuminati types, I mean, they seem to be acting like some kind of hive mind. They are going towards a goal that they've been working on for thousands of years that they must have, like, you know, have talked about. It's too good. It's a very, very good plan. It doesn't have to do with money and power. I mean, it does, but not for the individual. I mean, certain extremely wealthy and powerful men have lived and died only putting together a small piece of this puzzle for the hive. And they didn't see any fruit of it, and they would have never seen any fruit, nor were their children or their grandchildren. They put together the piece nonetheless. It's because these entities are the agents. In the movie The Matrix, those are, in my opinion, that's what they are. They are a part of this system. And as long as they are there, this system will win. That's why the discrediting of Jesus is coming like a huge wave, is because they have to discredit the Bible. They have to discredit Jesus because it's the only way to stop them, and they are the system. The New World Order is completely satanic. You listen to Alex Jones, you listen to all these people that barely talk about it. Alex finally did a really good rant about it. I think he's talked about it a lot of times, but you know, he was saying that every door he kicks down, the further he goes, the more he looks, there's, as he puts it, devil worshippers behind every door. I mean, they're all united by their satanic worship. Not their magic and their magicians, they're united by Satanism. The worship and sacrifice to Satan. And yes, it's veiled at lower levels. They call it a lot of different things. They believe a lot of different things about what it is. But at the high levels, the people really running the show, the covens of covens, the covens of covens of covens, the Rothschilds, the ones at the highest levels of these, of the ranks of the covenhood here, know who they serve. And that's what the rituals are about at that high level. I mean, we're dealing with that. That's who my war is against. And so you want to help that war, then that's what you're doing. Whether you know it or not, that's what you're doing. I don't have time to apologize for that. You either don't see it or what, you just haven't, or you're a part of it, but you're helping them nonetheless. I just don't have time to play around. This is much too important to worry about what people are going to think about me for talking about somebody, or, you know, that's a huge thing that's going on. Oh, here's Chris talking about one of our favorite conspiracy people again. Oh my gosh, what's he doing talking about Jordan Maxwell or Zachariah Sitchin or Michael Tesarian or Freeman? You can't talk about those people. You can't talk about them. They're the ones that gave us truth. They give us truth. I'm trying to warn you guys that if you don't see the motives behind this New World Order system, then you're not going to be able to see who really is or isn't a part of it. Until you understand what their goal is, you can't possibly make a distinction of who is and who isn't a part of it. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, every really good researcher in this entire field has found out that these people are massive occultists, that they are very dedicated religious individuals. And it's not kind of wishy-washy, yeah, I might go to Coven this Sunday, or maybe I'll just stay at home and watch football. These people are very dedicated. And you can't overlook that when trying to decide what their motives are. You know, it seems like that is just completely thrown out the window. But this is very, very important. And yes, they are very dedicated. They map this stuff out. They know where to be. They are in the churches. They are in the truth movement a lot more than you think that they are. This is we are not as smart as we think we are. That's what I'm saying. If I'm the only one out here pointing out to these people that are obviously a part of it, then we are nowhere near as smart as we think we are. We are so convinced we have it all figured out. We are so convinced that we have it figured out that the only logical explanation for me, for the people out there, is that I must be doing what I'm doing to get famous, or for my ego, or I'm just trying to tear people down in order to build myself up. Well, you know, I don't care at all about that. If anybody thinks that I'm doing this for popularity, then you gotta realize how many people loathe me, okay? You know, there's a lot of people that hate me, and that has never happened before in my life. It's a new thing to have people hate me with a passion. So if you think that I'm doing this for popularity, then you got another thing coming. And if you think that I'm doing it to be popular with the Christians, then you got another thing coming, because they're not, you know, I'm what much too out there for them too. I don't even know where the people that download the show are, you know, because it's not a part of either one of the groups. It's somewhere in the middle, and I think that is where the truth is, and that's why we have so much trouble distinguishing what's real and what isn't, because oftentimes it's right in the middle. All right. Okay, I'm going to take a break and calm down a little bit here. And I just want to remind you guys, check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/nowheretorun1984, and subscribe to it or link me to your videos on it so I can help spread those around as well. And also check out the video from my band. I'll link that in the show notes section of the websites, and I might put out a podcast, but you can download it if you want. But yeah, go check out the website, Nowhere to Run www.podomatic.com or conspiracyclothes.com/nowhere to run to see that video. And I think I'll go ahead and play that track here on the break, just to be completely self-serving and self-promoting here. So, I'll play that song. I really like this song from the band. It actually lended itself very well to the video. I was very excited about the way it turned out. We worked with a very good producer to do it. The guy has lots of gold records on his wall and is very excited about the project, and we're excited about working with him. So, and we've got another song we're doing with him, and we're just very, very much excited about it. So, anyway, I'll play that in the break, and then we'll get back on the other side and talk about some other issues. Again, stay tuned to Nowhere to Run. A lot of cool things happening. A lot of interviews this week. So, stay tuned to the website and to the channel. And we were going to shift gears into all kinds of different subjects. We're going to really try to figure out what's going on with all this stuff. Try to really prep ourselves for anything that's coming and understanding as much as we can in the time that we're given to understand it. So stay tuned. Let's beat the New World Order, and I'll see you on the other side.
Explains his ministry, Shatter the Darkness.
Almost 20 years now, we've been just kind of just trying to help people, minister to people, share with people coming out of cults, just mind control, the occult, left-hand path stuff. And then we ran into the real underground that's been going on for a long time, and so it has a lot to do with deliverance and dealing with the dark side and power encounters, and you know, it has confronting perpetrators of violence on children and ritual abuse. It deals with healing the hearts of the victims, and you know, keeping our guard and trying to do what we can to expose it, stop some of it.
You can visit Russ Dizdar's website at shatterthedarkness.net, where you'll find hours of free MP3s and podcasts, as well as courses for your church or your ministry to begin to learn how to deal with encounters of this nature in a biblical way. Shatterthedarkness.net.
Okay, we're back. What, you know, I just realized what I wanted to do on this other side of this break, and I think you're really going to like it. As I mentioned before, I am going to be doing an interview with this guy later on in the week, and he's the guy that did the Jordan Maxwell video. His name's Matt Kazee. Very interesting guy. One of the interesting things about him is that he's from Blacksburg, Virginia, where the Virginia Tech shootings happened. He was there that day. All of his friends were there. I think he grew up there. Very interesting take on this. The anniversary of that shooting was a few days ago, and he did a show about it, and it was very good. A lot of information, some serious information. I even called in on the show a little later on. You'll hear me. I'm the first caller he takes, so, and I asked some questions about a lot of that stuff. So I'm going to play that clip. It's very edge of your seat kind of stuff, because here's a guy that did a lot of research into the Virginia Tech kind of thing, And I think it'll prep for the interview we do later on this week with Matt, because he's a very, very good guy, and we're going to have a very interesting conversation about Jordan Maxwell, I think. So, and among other things. So let me play this clip, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So email me at chris@conspiracyclose.com. You can support the show by praying for me. I ask that they pray for anything that you can think of that I might need, but certainly to keep from giving out disinformation, to be corrected from my mistakes, to have humility, to not let my pride keep me from truth, to be willing to be wrong, and to just have general protection from you know, those that would seek to destroy me or what I'm doing or whatnot. So I appreciate all of your prayers, and that's I thank you for your support in this show. Okay, let's play Matt's show. You're really going to like it. Take it easy. Later.
Welcome to the broadcast this evening. We are discussing, in the first hour, we are discussing the Virginia Tech massacre. Of course, many of you know that I was there that day. I woke up that morning to loudspeakers going off, and I did have a dear, sweet friend of mine, Julia Pride, who was shot and killed in Norris Hall. Something that changed my life forever. It is something that helped define for me an entire generation. And I know for many of you who heard it live that day, it was a very gripping story on the Alex Jones show. I called in that morning and did, gosh, a bunch of shows that week discussing the event and what happened. And officially, we broke the story before CNN ever even thought about breaking the story. So it's just one of those things where it will change you forever if you're ever in a situation like that. It actually woke me up to the dangers of gun control, the dangers of mind control, and the dangers of campus shootings. So we're going to discuss that a little bit. We are taking calls at 1-877-REVERE-0. So give us a call. And Rob Revere is producing the show tonight for the live calls. And I want to give him a big shout out and thanks a million, Rob. It really means a lot. So, for me, I just want to recap just a little bit of what happened that morning. Went to bed that night, the night before. Of course, let me go back. A week before the shootings, the campus started getting bomb threats. The campus was in a situation where they had bomb threats all week long, starting as early as April 2nd, bomb threats. So I've actually got a little article here from the Virginia Tech website, and this is on April 2nd, 2007. Torgelson Hall to reopen at 7 a.m. Tuesday. April 2nd, 2007. Police have completed their search of Virginia Tech's Torgelson Hall without incident. As a precaution, the building will remain closed Tuesday morning. You hear that? As a precaution to a bomb threat, the building will remain closed Tuesday morning. Provided no new information is discovered, the building will reopen at 7 a.m. for regular business. Classes will be held on the regular schedule. So this is the beginning of the bomb threats. This is the run up to the big event. And, of course, we found out later that it wasn't just Torgelson Hall. There were several buildings, in fact, three buildings, that surrounded Norris, where all the focus of the bomb threats were. So that week, we have multiple bomb threats all week long. And the reason I wanted to read this article is this is very telling of how things happen normally. You get a bomb threat, you close and cancel classes in that building. As a precaution, the building remained closed. So, the bomb threats on April 2nd, I think there were bomb threats on April 5th, all week long bomb threats. The biggest bomb threats happened on April 13th, Friday the 13th. And at this point, everybody in town's talking about it. My friends and I are all discussing what could be going on? Why are these bomb threats happening? And I lived in a little place. I don't live there anymore. On campus, which was right off of, that would be Barger Street, which runs right through the heart of campus. And so I get home from work that day and find, about 200 SWAT and state police and sheriffs from not just Montgomery County, but from the surrounding counties, from Giles, and from other counties. They're all converging, and they had locked down part of the street that ran parallel with Barger Street, and they locked it down, running all the way up to Norris Hall. Had it all locked down, had it filled with it looked like 200 vehicles. It was massive. People in SWAT uniform with the helmets and everything coming out of the big SWAT vans. They're all in their black uniforms going clearing buildings. They killed Torgelson and several other buildings, including Norris Hall, which is where the final shooting took place. And so we were amazed. We sat out there and watched. We didn't know what was going on. And we watched for hours and hours and hours thinking that eventually somebody will tell us what's happening. It's got to be something more than a bomb threat. Apparently, the bomb threats running up to Friday the 13th were enough to eventually, once Friday the 13th happened, they just convened on the location and had everybody there for maybe 8 to 10 hours. They were there all through the night, up until midnight or after. All of these police are there. They cleared all the buildings. They searched for bombs. They brought in dogs. They did the whole thing. They responded the way they should. So now it's going into the weekend. Obviously, there's no classes in Norris on Saturday. And they didn't have to worry about canceling classes. Although this proves that they had canceled classes on April 2nd just because of a bomb threat. Now, when you get one bomb threat and you cancel classes, and then you get two bomb threats and you cancel classes, and three, and then the big one happens on Friday the 13th, and every SWAT vehicle you could imagine was there, you begin to wonder, Why on earth did they not cancel classes on the day of the shooting? Why on earth did they not cancel classes? So when we get back on the other side, we're going to try and get into that a little bit, trying to unravel the mystery of the Virginia Tech shootings, trying to set the record straight once and for all, because there are plenty of people who have heard all kinds of stories. Some of them are rumors. Some of them are facts. And that's the key. We need to clearly show which are rumors and which are facts, which are rumors that are based on truth and which are rumors that are just nonsense. So that's what we're going to try and do this first hour. In the second hour, we've got a very special guest. Alex Ansary is going to be on the broadcast for the remainder of the second hour, discussing all kinds of things. So we're going to take this break, and on the other side, we'll go ahead and get into the Virginia Tech shooting. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. You're listening to 33rd Parallel News, and I'm your host, Matthew Kazee. It is April 16th, 2008. 1 year ago today, the Virginia Tech massacre just ruined an entire community of people. It absolutely brought us to our knees. So I'm going to try and get through this without getting emotional, but this story is something that people need to know. This is something that people need to realize, how this stuff works. What are the warning signs? How can you stop something like this from happening to your campus? So we've been talking about the bomb threats, which I think is the crux of the case. Bomb threats on April 2nd, cancel classes. Bomb threats continue through the week, cancel classes. Friday the 13th, massive bomb threats. All the SWAT convene. All of the sheriff, state police, special forces for the local areas, they all convene and stay there until after midnight. They search all of the buildings where the bomb threats are. And you have to understand something, that these buildings, they're specific places that teach specific things. Of course, the final shooting was in the engineering building. So we're going to get into that a little bit later, but I want to continue with this bomb threat. Okay, so after Friday the 13th, massive bomb threats. Here's another article from Virginia Tech website. Torkelson, Durham, and Whitmore Halls to open at 7 a.m. on Monday. $5,000 reward offered. April 15th, 2007, three university buildings, Torkelson, Durham, and Whitmore, have been closed since Friday because of a bomb threat. And folks, these are the only buildings where the bomb threats happened. These buildings surround Norris Hall, right across from the drill field. And Norris is attached to another building. So you have to start looking at how this happened, how this guy slipped through their fingertips. Now, so the article continues. Have been closed since Friday the 13th because of a bomb threat. Police have swept the buildings with all the search teams and deemed the building suitable for the beginning of 7 a.m. Monday, April 16th. Always, of course, that's when they start. At 7 a.m., that's when classes are. And that's when they start opening up campus. That's when they allow people to go into the dorms. That's when they get unlocked and so forth. Of course, if you've got your card, you can get into them anytime you want. Virginia Tech has posted a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons, being the keyword, involved in either the bomb threat incidents occurring on April 2nd or April 13th. No mention of the bomb threats during the week, which, from everything I can gather from students, it was a continuous thing that week. just building up to the big one on April 13th. There were all kinds of notes that were being left around campus. There was, of course, the murderer himself. Everybody knew that this guy was crazy. We'll get into that a little bit later. Virginia Tech Police, in collaboration with other law enforcement agencies, continued to investigate both incidents. April 13th, Virginia Tech is offering a $5,000 reward for the two recent bomb threats on campus. Now, maybe I'm wrong, maybe there were only two, but from what I've gathered, and I was there during the week, I'd be going out talking to people. There was another bomb threat today. Okay, it continues. The reward will be given for information or leads leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons involved in either bomb threats incidents on April 2nd or April 13th. The information should be directed to Virginia Tech Police. So let me see if I should read some of this stuff. Okay, the buildings that the bomb threats always occurred on were Torgelson, Durham, and Whittemore. And in Torgelson, they have a thing called the VT Cave, which is the virtual reality department. Now, there's very key programs, DARPA-funded programs, in all three of these buildings. Big ones. Big ones. as this goes on this weekend, here, April 15th, which is the day that somebody saw a kid in a hoodie chaining the doors to Norris Hall shut on April 15th. The same day this was posted, there's somebody in a hoodie chaining the doors to Norris shut and gets seen. It gets reported because of all the suspicious activity, and everybody on campus knew something was going on. I mean, this is a sleepy little town called Blacksburg, to quote Kathy O'Brien, a sleepy little town. Now, bring you back to that year, the first day of school that year, which is actually the previous year, but the beginning of that school year, there was another school shooting. It was the situation where Will Morva, who was a local, he broke out of prison, or was out of jail, and he shot a security guard and two police officers, I believe. Now, let's go back to that day. First off, Will Morva, everybody knew Will Morva. Everybody knew Will Morva. That's Barefoot Will, is what they called him. Not everybody called him. This is a kid who grew up in Blacksburg, went to Blacksburg High School. His brother went into the military, Mike Morva. I was friends with both of them. Everybody was. So, his brother gets sent to Afghanistan, and things start to change pretty quick in Will Morva's life. Goes to Afghanistan, and Will went from being a normal kid, kind of goofy, to somebody that had a lot of anger in him. And he told me one time, last serious conversation I believe I had with Will Morva, asked him how he was doing. He said he was doing terrible. He said that nothing mattered, that he'd just as soon die because everybody's phony and that the military is making his brother kill women and children in Afghanistan. I mean, I didn't know what to say. I was like, oh, man. So I tried to talk to him about it a little bit, but at that point in his life, he was withdrawing from everybody. So it goes on. He was literally at that point living on people's couches. He was living in the woods, which is where he was a survivalist thing came about. But some very interesting things happened in his life before he got arrested for petty crime, which was vigilante Will was one of the things, where he actually helped several people, who were getting potentially to get beat up, including a woman who worked at the local bar that everybody knows, who got beat up just terribly one night after she walked out of work and walked down into a dark alley. And it was Will Morva who brought about the arrest of that character who was an evil man who just beat on a woman unmercifully. So in some ways, as his life degraded to the point of getting kind of shunned by all his friends, there were these other stories that came out. You know, he helped Jamaica Kevin, was going to get beat up by some frat guys, and all of a sudden Will Morva showed up out of someplace and stopped it. And it wasn't long before he was doing stupid petty crimes, trying to rob ATM machines. Shows you how smart he is. I'm going to rob an ATM machine. Give me your money. I mean, it's just stupid stuff. Walking into Burger King and saying, give me your money. So he got arrested, spent a year in jail, breaks out, acts like he's sick and had to go to the hospital, breaks out, tells the cop he needs to go use the bathroom. The cop lets him out of the shackles, goes and uses the bathroom, rips the handicap bar off of the wall and beats the cop down, takes his gun, shoots a security guard and kills him right in the hospital. Flees into Blacksburg. So this happened in the afternoon, maybe around 5 o'clock. I was actually with a group of friends. We were all going to go eat for the girl that he saved. Well, he didn't really save her, but he helped get that guy arrested. It was her birthday, and we all went out to eat, and we found out, I mean, the cops were stopping cars and pulling them out, and we found out who it was. It was Will Morva. Okay, here's something else about it. After he got arrested, he screwed over a bunch of people, stealing money. He tricked this guy into buying him a cell phone, and he ran up $2,000 worth of cell phone calls and never paid him. Stuff like that. So he got arrested. And this kid made a t-shirt called Will Morva Sucks, I believe is what it was. And it was his mugshot. People bought those t-shirts like hotcakes. Supposedly in jail, he got some kind of hit list that he was going to go back and kill that guy and anybody else who bought one of those t-shirts. Well, what's so crazy and ironic about all this is randomly there was a guy that day, one of my friends, local bartender, who was wearing the Will Morva shirt, and he breaks out of prison or jail, kills two people, flees that night. Everybody thought he was leaving the area. The police, this is a classic story of, well, we think he has left the area and he's not going to return, so don't worry. But they were worried. They were pulling everybody over. So the next morning, we find out that Will Morva made it all the way into Blacksburg, goes and starts showing up at people's homes, and got a change of clothes from somebody, rolls out, and then literally SWAT would come in behind and try and capture the guy. And I wish they had of. That's for sure. That kid needed to be taken down quick. So the next morning at 7 a.m. on the Huckleberry Trail, literally 2 miles from campus, if that, Will Morva was hiding in the bushes. A police officer walking up the Huckleberry, walks past him in the bushes without seeing him. Will Morva steps out, puts a gun to the back of his head, and pulls the trigger. That shows you what kind of evil filth Will Morva became. Now, here's why I'm telling this whole Morva story. That morning, 2 miles away from campus, maybe three, but I would say it's anywhere from 1 to 2, 3 miles is the Huckleberry Trail. A police officer gets killed by just a local guy, wasn't a student at Virginia Tech, and they canceled classes, and there were some scares that maybe he had made it onto campus. So what did Virginia Tech do? They cleared the campus. They didn't lock it down. They cleared it. CNN has video of the kids running from the buildings. They cleared it. They evacuated campus. And for 2 or 3 days, CNN talked about it. And everybody in town at the local pubs was saying, oh my gosh, can you believe it was Will Morva who got national spotlight on Virginia Tech? And how, man, that is crazy. So for the remainder of the first semester, everybody, it was kind of a running joke. If you're going to get, you know, you see some guy who looks like he's going to wig out on you, and when people would say, what are you going to go Morva on me? You're going to go Morva? You're going to go on some rampage? I mean, all kinds of people on campus knew about this, talked about this, joked about it. Well, Cho was somebody in the middle of all of this. And I hate to even call him by his name. So I might just call him Dirtbag from here on out. Dirtbag was in the middle of this, hearing this in the students talk. Obviously a crazy man. Comes from a gifted family. His sister works for DynCorp. I think it was the State Department. And her boss owns DynCorp, if I'm not mistaken. He was a gifted kid. He could have done whatever he wanted to. He chose not to. He started to withdraw from life. He became susceptible to many different aspects of depression. He had stalked several kids on campus, several girls on campus. He was arrested twice. He was ruled to be insane by the local courts. Then you had a couple of great teachers who tried their best to take extra time to nurture him into somebody that is actually responsible. And it went on and went on. The school wasn't going to help him. School was didn't even care about Dirtbag. Or maybe I should just call him Question Mark, because that's how he signed all his papers, Question Mark. Every paper he wrote, Question Mark at the end when it was time to sign it. Which makes me wonder, you know, is it that he doesn't know who he is? Is it that simple? This is a computer kid who, you know, played online games, used the chat services, and obviously, if you're from Korea and you don't, I mean, this is just my speculation here, so don't say that I'm saying this is what it was, but this is what I kind of think. I think the reason he wrote Question Mark is because if you don't have Korean fonts installed on your computer, then it all shows up as question marks. Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. That's just a little side note. So you have two excellent teachers who are the real heroes in this entire event, who try take him under their wing and try and nurture him, because they know the kid is smart, he comes from a good family, and even beside all that, they're good teachers. They don't want anybody to fall through the cracks. And these teachers got to the point where they realized that this kid is mentally unstable, and he is thinking about going on a rampage. All the way to the point where one of these teachers, Nikki Giovanni, actually had a code name for Dirtbag or Question Mark or Filth or whatever you want to call him, had a code name so that in the class when she's with him and they're all with their students, she could say the name of a deceased professor and two students would know that Cho, or Dirtbag, or Scumbag, or Filth, was getting ready to go on his rampage. To get up quietly, walk out of the room, and call the state police because he's going on a rampage. That's how much people knew what was going to happen with this kid. So he continues to stalk girls. He continues to make threats through chat services. His roommates described him as not there, literally. Gone more than he was ever there. Where was he going? He supposedly had no friends, didn't communicate with anybody, lived his life through internet games and all that stuff. But his roommates say that he was gone most of the time. They also say that when they tried to talk at him, it was like talking to a brick wall. Nothing was there. So you should dig up those files of the roommate's testimony on Question Mark and how he really was. And it leads, and you know, this is for anybody who wants to investigate this stuff, because honestly, folks, I'm sick of it. I have been dreading this day for an entire year. I'll be glad when it's over. But going on, I mean, here's a kid that's gone more than he's there. He's a brick wall. You can't even say anything to him that he comprehends. he is withdrawing from society and getting drawn into some internet society, supposedly. But if he's gone more than he's there, then I guess he went to the computer lab. I don't know. I think somebody's not telling the whole story, though. That's for sure. So, what I'm saying is this thing needs to be blown wide open. Somebody needs to investigate and investigate and investigate. Shortly after this happened, it was a couple days later, maybe that the Monday after the shooting, or no, I think it was maybe that Friday. I did the Larry Pratt show on Gun Owners of America, his radio show, Live Fire Radio, and we discussed the whole case. And it happens to be the most downloaded piece of media from my entire website. And, you know, I was telling him some of these things that had come up, and that was just at an early state, all this information was coming out. And I told him that when people actually sue for the Freedom of Information Act and get the truth out, maybe it'll be a year later. Larry told me, no, Matt, sorry. But the bottom line is, in Columbine, it took 4 years. 4 years to find out that those kids had supposedly drug bombs into the buildings. 125 bombs that they had brought in, some of them so big it took two men to carry them out. What is all that stuff? How come Cho continually gravitated towards Columbine and adopted this so-called trench coat mafia personality? All right, when we get back on the other side, we're going to continue to get into this. And it's, gosh, I may have to go a little bit late tonight because this is important stuff and people need to know it. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. This is 33rd Parallel News. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. We are discussing Virginia Tech, and I promise I am going to take calls. I do have a few more things that I need to say. I'm trying to do this quick because I'm already running out of time in the first hour. I might have to, after Alex Ansari comes up, I might have to get back into this. If Revere will let me go on for a while longer, we'll see about that. Let's talk about the timeline. April 2nd. April 13th, Friday the 13th, bomb threats, massive bomb threats on April 13th. They canceled classes both times. They warned people. Of course, I mean, it ran like wildfire across Little Blacksburg. And the main buildings that these bomb threats were, Torkelson, Durham, and Whittemore. I would ask anybody who knows anything about Virginia Tech to start researching DARPA and those three buildings, Torkelson, Durham, and Whittemore. So April 15th, Tech offers a $5,000 reward for any information. Well, you got two teachers who are telling them the whole time, watch out for this kid. He's going to go on a rampage. He's talking about Columbine. He's writing stories about wanting to do this. Now, what's interesting about April 15th is that's Sunday before the 16th, Monday, and we find out later, months later, that a kid in a hoodie was seen chaining the doors to Norris shut on April 15th, a day before the massacre. And then the police say, well, we have no reason to believe that it was Cho. And then later say, well, we think he was doing some kind of trial run. So maybe you should look into that and figure out why this is, why this happened. So you got all the SWAT there on Friday the 13th. They have police presence on campus that whole weekend on post, sitting out late night, watching the students go get drunk. Sunday comes and goes. Monday morning, I wake up around 9:30. It was right around 10 o'clock, maybe. It's hard for me to remember the exact time that I woke up. I think it was probably between, let's say, between 9:30 and 10:30. Now, they have, I guess it was more like around 10 o'clock is what I'm going to say. I woke up, my roommate says that we woke up to gunfire. I don't remember hearing the gunfire. I do remember shooting up out of bed, like, what was that? Both of us met in the living room, running from our bedrooms. And within a very short while, loudspeakers come on, talking about, stay in your rooms, there's a shooter on campus. Don't go near windows and doors, stay indoors. Shooter on campus. So, what we find out is one of the most heinous things on earth. That Virginia Tech is willing to cancel classes for bomb threats. But when it comes, and, you know, here they're all talking about, everything will open up again at 7 a.m. So 7 a.m. comes on Monday, April 16th. And this dirtbag is waiting outside a dorm room so that he can get in. He didn't have a pass key for it. Either he waited until somebody walked out, or if I'm not mistaken, the door is open at 7 a.m. Now, odds are it took some time to get up to, I believe it was the second floor. He was seen by several people. He went and shot and killed two people. One in the dorm room, and I think one on his way out. I could be mistaken about that. Doesn't matter. Two dead in AJ. At 7:15, the police are swarming the campus. So, two dead in AJ. Somebody calls the police immediately. It takes them maybe 6 to 10 minutes to get there. There is video on the net. Of course, maybe not now because they took all my Virginia Tech footage down. Took it all down. Thanks a lot, Google. So now when you go to those stories on Jones Report or InfoWars, it's got video stuff, it's all gone. I've waited. I didn't put it back up. I'm going to wait until, I wanted to wait until after this whole year was over and the anniversary is over. And now I can actually start getting into the real research with it and talking about some of the things that I just didn't want to talk about. Out of respect. You know, I'm not some guy that's trying to beat anybody over the head with what I think. I'm just telling you what I know, which is two dead in AJ, 7 in the morning. Police come. They see two dead right there in the heart of campus, just across from the drill field, right there in the middle of campus. What do they do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. If you didn't see or hear those police coming, you didn't know. They don't do anything. They don't warn students. They don't turn on the loudspeakers. They don't send out emails. They don't do anything. Now, you got to understand something. That's 7 a.m. People actually get in there at, you know, start coming into campus, especially around 8 and 9. So I had a friend of mine who came to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. As soon as he walked through the door, his boss and everybody was there saying, oh, no, we've got kids are killed on campus. We're going to have to stay here. I think they're going to lock down the campus. I think they're going to lock down the campus. So if you want to go, you better go now. So what happens? 2 hours and 26 minutes go by. 2 hours and 26 minutes. And they send out the first email saying, we think there's been a shooting on campus. Just stay tuned for further information. I've got these emails. I may have to post them. In fact, they are already posted on Jones Report. I'm sure you can find them right now. So they don't warn anybody. You've got all kinds of classes starting up. People completely in the dark that there is a shooting right in one of the dormitories. The police are swarming the place. They've got their police line, the whole thing. My buddy saw him when he drove in. Oh, my gosh, that's a lot of cops. Something must have happened. He gets there. His boss tells him what happened. Anybody in the core of campus that day knew by 7:30 what was going on. But the administration just handles it with kid gloves. They don't do anything. They don't warn. They don't send out emails. They don't turn on those loudspeakers that were installed in case of emergency. Like the Will Morva madness. Will Morva's going on a rampage. Now, that wasn't even a student. That happened miles away from campus. But they canceled classes that day. They did something totally different than what they did on April 16th. They canceled classes and evacuated buildings. You can see the video of the students running. Big change that semester. Because you have the federal guidelines for school shootings getting implemented at Virginia Tech. The feds will give you, will help you. We'll help get the word out. We'll donate equipment and we'll here's a bunch of money. Just do it this way. You got to go into lockdown first. You got to lock the kids in the buildings with a potential gunman. I mean, it's just madness. That whole approach is madness. You can see the kids on April 16th trying to get out the doors locked. And I'm not just talking Norris Hall. I'm talking all those buildings locked down. But not until 2 hours and 26 minutes later. By 9 o'clock, they begin the lockdown. They send out the first emails at 9:26. An hour later, when I get up, it's virtually over. I guess it was over. By the time the loudspeakers came on, it's over. Over and done. And here's why I'm saying this. My friend Julia Pride would never have come to class if she had only known. She would have never come to class. No, she had to go into Norris and meet one of the most horrible deaths ever by some complete dirtbag, scum-filled piece of evil. And so, let's get this straight. They claim that this kid shot two people in AJ, went back to his dorm room that his roommates say he was never there. He's gone more than he was there. Makes all these videos, sends them to the president of NBC, and it gets all the way to the president's desk of NBC before they even open it. With a complete manifesto, all the photographs, video of him in a van that he had rented, and there is somebody else playing this game with that madman. He was not acting alone. I'm not saying that there was somebody in Norris shooting other than Cho, but I tell you this, the bomb threats didn't stop. The bomb threats continued that day. And continued weeks and months after April 16th at the very buildings where Cho's calling them in, Torgerson, Durham, and Whittemore. Who is calling in bomb threats right precisely at the time that this massacre starts? So this kid supposedly went home. He went and filmed all this stuff, walked over to the post office, mailed it. Comes back under, 50 cops on campus. He's dressed like one of the witnesses said, like a Boy Scout with black gloves on. These kind of, I guess kind of like a Boy Scout type thing, but that's where he had all his ammo. It's kind of like ammo straps or whatever across his shoulders. Walks all the way right into the heart of it, evading police. A lot of people would think he went into the front of Norris Hall. He went into the back of Norris Hall. That's what a lot of people don't know is how all this stuff happened. He went into the back of Norris Hall, and it's two buildings that are attached. And he chained the door shut. Janitor sees him chaining the door shut. he pulls out one gun. He didn't have two guns like the pictures of him, all the eyewitnesses, one gun. In fact, ballistic reports showed that of the 100 and I think it was either 166 or 177, one of the two, shots fired, they all came from one pistol, a 9mm. Now here's where it gets creepy. Right about the time that he's going in and chaining the doors shut, my friend Jamal, who shot the cell phone video, is directly across campus looking straight up towards Barger Street over in the engineering departments, and he sees the cops running towards Norris, and of course he captured the infamous cell phone video. A lot of people don't realize that the end of that cell phone video got cut off and re-edited for internet distribution. Now here's the key to all of this. They claim that this kid chained the door shut and went to a classroom, began the rampage, went to another classroom, ended the rampage. 106, I'll just say it conservatively, 166 rounds in 9 minutes from one pistol, 8 rounds per clip. You do the math. You do the math. He's got to chain the doors. He's got to get up there. He's got to start shooting. He's got to change clips. He's got to go into the other classroom. He's got to come back and start shooting more people. My friend Matt Webster was laying down on the ground acting like he was dead, and the guy comes back. He's not done. Comes back. Sees Matt laying there, walks right up to him, puts the pistol up against his head and pulls the trigger, and it didn't kill him. So, that's what I'm saying. Listen to the cell phone video. Time the shots. Do the math yourself. It's impossible. They're lying. It was more like 20 minutes. That's the bottom line. They're lying. They're covering up mistakes that were made. All right, I'm actually going to go ahead and take a call because I've been promising that, and I do have a guest coming up later, so... let's see if we can get a call up here. Let's see. I believe it's Chris White. let's see. Chris from Nashville. Hey, Chris, how are you doing? I'm doing good, man. The human nature is to immediately say, oh, it was just a mistake. So I would say it's split right down the middle between half the people who say, how dare you question that? And then the other half of people, which right after it happened, it was more like 60-40 in favor of, people were seriously pissed. I talked to families who were just screaming that the president should be fired, and this was on the 16th. It was that night they were talking about this. There were all kinds of rumors of other people being involved. In fact, the first reports that morning were two gunmen. So now, a year later, it's that much more polarized. I would say, point you to the example of the lie-in up at Washington for gun control. A bunch of Virginia Tech people went up there, some in favor of gun control, some in favor of concealed carried permits. So it is very divisive still to this day. All the information in and out. A lot of people don't know these things. But for the most part, the real core of the local community knows something was wrong and they're not telling us the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's a kid who's never trained with a firearm at all. He bought 32 rubber ducks before, as a few weeks before, when he bought the clips from eBay. A lot of rumors saying that he bought ammo from eBay. No, he bought clips and 32 rubber ducks. He spoke about something in his manifesto. If it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So what did they do? They drained the duck pond a few months after, which is this little pond right there, very close to Norris, not far. And they drained it for one reason, because there's a missing hard drive from the kid's computer. They go in there and search all his stuff. Whoops, the hard drive's gone. So they got the idea, well, maybe he threw the hard drive in the duck pond because he bought all those rubber duckies, and he was talking about if it quacks like a duck, so we better drain it. They drained it. They searched it. They found nothing. Here's what I'm saying. Somebody got in there and took his hard drive. This is a kid who wanted everybody to know what he was doing. He was glorifying himself through evil. And through all his manifestos and videos, that a lot of those haven't even been released, he absolutely wanted people to know what's going on, and now they can't find his hard drive. Somebody got in there. As far as Kathy O'Brien goes, I was completely unfamiliar with her work at all until this happened. But she wrote in a book that years ago, about a mind control, DARPA-funded mind control program at Blacksburg, Virginia, in a sleepy little town called Blacksburg. And she was taken to a facility that she referred to as Butt Mountain, where she was part of this mind control experiment. Well, I tell you what, when I found out that Kathy O'Brien had said in 1995 that Virginia Tech was good for two things, engineering and mind control, I was blown away. That day, she's posted on her website, I told you, I warned you, y'all didn't listen. She testified to Congress about this stuff. And so I started researching it like a madman and found out, you know, first off, you got snipers for police saying that it's impossible. He had a 66% accuracy rate, 64%, 166 rounds in 9 minutes, supposedly, 64% kill rate. Now, that's just unheard of. The guy was shooting like a marksman. Yep. No, that's true. That is true, and I believe that. I mean, the guy obviously was, anybody that does that is a demon in my book, and he had that thousand-yard stare to him, and he obviously, and another thing, another good point about all of this stuff and whether or not he was part of some mind control experiment that happened actually in Blacksburg. I'm starting to think that that facility is closer than people realize. And what my research has pointed to is some scary stuff. In one of his videos, the camera pans. Now, somebody was panning the camera. So other people were involved. Here's something interesting, Chris, that you might not know. If you saw on CNN in the past couple of days about a kid who killed himself because he was afraid that people would think he was Cho, and he was a Virginia Tech student. It was an Asian kid who killed himself. He got down and started withdrawing from his family. You know, I think that there are other people like that kid. There are other stories to be heard that are being covered up, and I am convinced that there was somebody else that day that was supposed to take to go into the building beside Norris Hall and continue the rampage down that side, just very similar to Columbine. And, in fact, a month after Virginia Tech bomb threats, same three buildings, they go clear out Torgerson. They find very near to the VT cave, supposedly, and this got reported in Blacksburg Times Online, I believe is what it was. It was an independent Blacksburg paper. And this is kind of, you know, this could be speculation or rumors or whatever, but I think there's truth in this. They go in to clear the building. They find a door that says bomb inside. And they get the bomb squad down there. People witnessed the bomb squad coming in there, of course. So they clear it out, and supposedly they found a videotape of a tall Asian man in a black trench coat swearing to avenge Cho's death. Now, I don't think this has anything to do with that kid who killed himself. You know, I haven't looked at that at all. But if you look at the eyewitness testimony that is readily available on the internet, there's a kid who got shot in the arm who testified to Katie Couric that the guy that he saw was a tall, 6 foot tall Asian man or taller in a long black trench coat. Everybody else talks about a short Asian kid who was dressed like a Boy Scout in a tan vest. Two totally different people. And I think that there was somebody that was supposed to start shooting and got cold feet or ran off or whatever. I don't know, but I think there's more to be found about it. Well, Chris, I appreciate the call. That's Chris White from Nowhere to Run, fellow Revere host. Excellent show. You should check it out. And he's going to be a guest on the show coming up real soon. So thanks again for the call, Chris. He must have already dropped. All right, give us a call at 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-REVERE-0. And we'll take some calls and try and get to the bottom of this. I'd love to hear your opinions about it. But right now I'm going to take a quick break. But before I go, you know, 166 rounds in 9 minutes, 64% accuracy, can't be done. They're lying about the timeline for one reason only, negligence. They don't want to get blamed. They don't want to get sued. It's going to happen, but they don't want it to happen, but it's too late. You know, it's one of those things that, right after it happened, you had all kinds of people saying that that Steger was going to get fired the next day. Didn't happen. They said that Flincham, the police chief, was going to get fired. Didn't happen. And you just got to ask yourself, why? Why no accountability? Well, how come George Bush showed up 2 days after the massacre to Virginia Tech to grandstand? And it took him 8 days to get down to Katrina. Maybe you should ask yourself that. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is 33rd Parallel News, and I'm your host, Matthew Kazee. We are taking live calls, so give us a call, 877-REVERE. 1-877-REVERE-0. And I'll try and get to your calls, although I do get rambling, and I've pushed back. Hopefully Revere's not going to cut me off. I don't think that's going to happen. But I've pushed back Alex Andrew. I've got a great interview with him coming up next. Chris brought up a great point. Mind control. Was this some kind of mind control? Of course, the internet was rampant with all kinds of information about that. And I think it was. Now, let's define that. Was this a situation where Cho was whisked off to some secret underground facility and messed with? I don't know. Does that have to happen to cause mind control? Absolutely not. In fact, if you engineer a society susceptible, you literally engineer a society where everybody's got the attitude of, you know, take a look at the world around you. I don't care. Everybody's going to hell. So you might as well, you know, go to hell in a bucket. At least I'm enjoying the ride kind of thing. And I will tell you this about underground bunkers and all that. When I heard that about Kathy O'Brien, I researched and researched and researched DARPA, Virginia Tech. They fund half of Virginia Tech. And these programs, some of these top secret programs, are done right there at Virginia Tech. Students don't even realize what they're working on in a lot of cases. So Butt Mountain, Blacksburg, Virginia. Had to find it. What I found was bizarre. I started looking for it, asking people. Nobody had heard of it. Then somebody says, oh, Butt Mountain, that's not in Blacksburg. That's in Perrysburg. That's, you know, 35, 40 minutes away. 35 to 40 minutes away from Blacksburg. You have this mountain, Butt Mountain, and they have a huge 7 mile deep mine. It is one of the proposed sites for the DUSL, Deep Underground Science Engineering Laboratory, for Virginia Tech, and it has been for years. So, but not in 1995. When Kathy O'Brien claims that she was taken to a place in Blacksburg called Butt Mountain. So when I found out where the real Butt Mountain is, I started to research it and look into it. You can drive right up to it and drive right in it if you want to. It is definitely a mine. You could drive a semi in there. No problem. excuse me. So that's instantly where I started looking. Well, that's what Kathy O'Brien said in 1995, so maybe she's right. I started looking into it. She testified to Congress about this stuff. And here's the thing. That's 45 minutes away. By the time you're in a car driving to Perrysburg, you forget all about Blacksburg. You know you're not in Blacksburg anymore. So why was she saying Butt Mountain, Blacksburg? And so I started researching it. I found out all about the DUSL. Started talking to some of my friends, military guys. Everybody pointed me to the armory up in Radford. And that they've got a big mountain that they have, you know, kind of got a bunker in. And that's probably where any kind of research, any kind of serious facility would be. So I started looking into that, the armory. On a whim, I decided to... I decided to do a search on Google Earth. Of course, I had thought maybe, you know, Google Earth could show me something about the real Butt Mountain. Maybe you could see some kind of airstrip or something like that. No, it's just a mine. But you could drive a huge semi in there, easy, take it down miles. So I started looking for it, you know, searching the mountain, nothing. It just looks like a mountain. So on a whim, I decided to type in the exact phrase that Kathy O'Brien said, which was Butt Mountain, Blacksburg, Virginia. Typed it into Google Earth. It took me straight down into Virginia Tech campus, right off of the side of 460. And there it was, a little marker. Butt Mountain, Blacksburg, Virginia, the proposed site for the DUSL, D-U-S-E-L, if you want to look it up. And I was stunned. I was like, what? So I instantly drove out. And actually, I was doing an interview with Alex Ansari that day. And before I did the interview, I drove out to this so-called Butt Mountain where Google Earth was saying it was. Nothing. Nothing at all. Just some fields. I drove as close as I could to getting to where the map, the printout of the map would say, this is it. And you know what was there? A park, baseball field, playground. So I'm thinking, well, something's not right here. But it was very interesting. So Google Earth doesn't show you Blacksburg. For some reason, they block it out. They do that to a lot of places. But you can go just outside of Blacksburg, up in the mountains, and you get the high-res photos. Inside Blacksburg, no. And so my friend, my roommate, told me about this site, local Blacksburg site, that uses satellite photographs much better than Google Earth, and you can check out anything. Now, I go ahead and figure out exactly where Google Earth is saying it. I go to the Blacksburg site. I zoom in. I check it out. There's the playground. I was just there. I knew that was as close as I could get to what this was. Well, sitting behind the playground, there was what looked like some strange things, like a burnout building kind of thing. Zoom all the way down, high res, and it happens to be the Blacksburg SWAT facility. There's a shooting range, there's buildings, cars that they shoot up, they kick in doors on these buildings and train their SWAT. And it is a stone's throw. Somebody could foul tip a ball right into the shooting range, no problem. So they got the SWAT training facility right next to a playground. Isn't that weird? Terrible city planning. So Google Earth, for some reason, is saying Butt Mountain is right in the center of the Blacksburg SWAT facility. Very strange. In fact, so strange, I about passed out. I went on a radio interview that Saturday, told Alex Ansary, by the time I get off the air, Google had censored it. You could no longer find that search phrase. Isn't that weird? Also, I got locked out of my computer, my website, for hours and hours and hours and hours. Instantly. As soon as I talked about it on radio. So I think that's pretty strange, and it leads a lot of credibility to Kathy O'Brien and what she had to say. Looks like we got a caller. We got James on line one, so we're going to go ahead and bring him up.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, James, how's it going?
Pretty good. This has been a really interesting show. Thanks for doing it. I've been listening. There are just a couple of points I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
I mean, I think obviously you talked about that there must have been
I'm not sure if the other person was actually shooting. I do believe, my personal opinion, is there was supposed to be two shooters in two buildings, and one chickened out.
Okay, what do you think about one thing I don't know about all this, is that the tape, so to speak, to NBC.
Yeah. Well, the ROTC was directly across the street from where I was living on Barger Street, and it was right there beside, it's about probably one block from Norris.
They had actually several buildings there, didn't they? Wasn't it like a really big deal?
Well, they did. It's a couple of buildings. It's all attached to itself, but it is right there, one block away from Norris. But, you know, the picture, a supposed picture of Cho in the Marine outfit with some other guy. Have you seen that?
I have, and what I'm saying is, I don't think it was Cho, but I think it was the person who was on the NBC tape. I just don't think the NBC tape was Cho. Well, I think it could have been the guy.
Well, you know what? I've heard a lot of that, too. In fact, Aaron Dykes from InfoWars felt the same way. A lot of people do. I can only go by what I've heard. See, the family, the Cho family lived in Blacksburg for 17 years, and there are a lot of people who knew the family. And so there were people that told me that was definitely him. That the picture that he had on his, ID was his.
Wait. From what I understand, he
spent
his entire high school up in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
That's right. He's Chantilly. Maybe it was 7 years then. I do know that he did go to that school in Chantilly, Virginia. And I tell you what, very interesting. There was another school shooter who went to the same school that he did in Chantilly. That's exactly right. And who did the same thing, talked about, you know, and they were taught by the same teachers. So it's very interesting. Well, I do know people who know the family. One of them is a good friend of mine, and she has actually met Cho when he was much younger. And so I'm not so sure that the family didn't know English. Yeah. There you go. And isn't it strange that, you know, the parents don't speak any English, but yet their daughter gets top clearance and her boss owns Dyncor, so bizarre. Well, you know, I think it is very close to being a service academy. It has a strong military background. It used to be, you know, the Polytech Institute, and it has always had a strong military background. You know, there were some people supposedly, and of course I can't confirm this, on paper, but I've had a lot of people tell me that there were people in the ROTC that said that he was being recruited for the CIA. Now, of course, I can't confirm that, or that he had tried to be recruited for the CIA and wasn't. But his sister, you know... I think you're right. I think that from what I heard is that he had tried to get to recruited or to tried to figure out who could recruit him into the CIA, and it never worked out. From everything that I heard, he was trying to do that, but it never happened and they weren't interested, as far as I know. You know, where that might have come from was there was a Chinese man who was arrested who was trying to go into Norris Hall while the shooting was occurring. And there were pictures of him, the cops holding him down on the ground. In fact, the early reports were that they thought that was him and that he had been captured. Now, like I said, James, the first reports of the day were that there were two gunmen. And, you know, supposedly that videotape was another Asian American, so there may be more people involved. But this kid worked for the Collegiate Times, which is the local tech paper, and he was trying to get into the shooting, which is so bizarre. But he did totally try and get in there. They warned him, told him to stop, and he would not stop. They arrested him. Yeah, I heard that Oberman report. If you can dig it up, send me a link and I'll play it before the show's over. bottom line. I think he should be fired immediately. I think he should have his pantsuit off of him. I think he's a complete fraud. There's nothing to make me sicker than President Steger. And I know that InfoWars people said that after the shooting, when Bush came down, that they talked to him about when he leaves tech being part of Homeland Security. Of course. It's just like Katrina. Nobody get, you know, nobody, no accountability, and the people who screw up get a good job, Brownie. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I don't know where this led in, but I remember looking into it at the time. I found there's some kind of link because researching some psychic people
at all. And I remember seeing there's some kind of crossover with some deadly humans into Katrina psychology. Wouldn't surprise me in the least, although.
Last thing before I go.
Okay. I don't know. I would love to. Without a doubt, anybody, you know as well as I do, James, anybody that goes to the doctor or anybody who, because they have to, like, you're stalking women on campus, get arrested multiple times, and then you set fire on campus like Cho did, and you go to some court and they rule you insane, the first thing they're going to give you is are reuptake inhibitors, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which is why this happened, if anything. You know, it makes you susceptible to mind control. You don't necessarily have to get whisked off to some base. You just absorb it like a sponge. Is there anything else, James? Thanks a lot, James. I really appreciate your call. Absolutely. Say it again, James. There you go. He's the man. He's got a lot of great stories. I check it out all the time. He did cover a lot of the Virginia Tech stuff, picked up a lot of the good story, you know, the information. And he sends me links all the time, and I'm like, whoa, how come I didn't find that? Well, it's because James found it first. Appreciate the call, James. All right, we're going to take another quick break and hopefully get some more calls in here. Give us a call. We are live for the remainder of the hour. And then we're going to have an interview with Alex Ansari coming up, I guess, at the bottom of this hour. So give us a call, 1-877-REVERE-0. 1-877-REVERE-0.